Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f- So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Here we go.
This is it.
This is Top Flight Time Machine. I am Andy Dawson. Pow, pow, pow.
I'm Sam Nifty Delaney. So what?
Welcome along to the Monday morning episode. Big news this morning, Sam. The Oxford vaccine seems to be on its way and it's 70% effective. Now
what?
Then...
I thought it was 90.
I suggest that you and me could shit out a better vaccine than that.
Fucking easy. We've read George's Marvellous Medicine.
Once again, it's Oxford and Cambridge, let's lump them in together, given all the advantages and failing to deliver anything, you know, useful to the world. I haven't got
what
a chip on my
shoulder.
What do you
mean, once again? Do you think Oxford and Cambridge have a track record of failure?
I would say... No. Well, possibly. I would say if anyone goes to Oxford or Cambridge, then they automatically should be at the absolute top of whatever they do. And be, delivering top-class results at all times.
We've been through this before, and you know I disagree with that, because I think that you're overlooking the fact that everyone is a human being. It's like you think they're robots and people, and human beings are like just things that are manufactured, and if they've been manufactured in the right factory, then there should not be any flaws.
Right, well, I'll allow for a 3% swing for flawed human beings that go to Oxford or Cambridge.
Well, life's life. You don't know what's going to come up in life, do you? I mean, like, for instance, say if you went to Oxford, you could, for instance, suffer from profound depression at a crucial moment in your career.
Yeah, they could fit into that 3%. That's what that
3%... Just the 3%. You get a 3% allowance for depression and
we'll
that.
We'll call it a sludge pile.
Well, you know, I applied for... Oxford. Do you know why I didn't get in, though?
Because you're a cockney?
Because I'm stupid. that was the only reason. And I think it's just indicative of the prejudice in this country that I applied and I had all... You know, listen, right? I was on course to get the right results. Mm-hmm. Exam results. That's why I was put forward by my sixth form college. Right. We're putting him forward, right? But let's be honest.
There! Push!
The sixth form college I went to was not... I mean, it wasn't a terrible place, but it was not, you know, a great place. It was not like a private school that was set up for that sort of thing. But it did have a section... That, some sort of scheme where they identified promising pupils and said, right, we're going to try and train you up. But the problem as well was that I don't think they had teachers who'd been to Oxford or Cambridge, right? So they didn't really know how to train you. They didn't know what to expect or anything like that.
They didn't. None of those teachers ever wore a flowing scarf or rode around town on a bicycle.
No. They're like, right, come in. Yeah, you're going up to speak to them posh cunts. First thing you got to always do is remember to wipe your nose before you walk into the room, right?
Don't talk while you're eating.
These snooty cunts, right? Don't go in eating a kebab like you are now. I mean, it's fine when you're with us, right? But if you stink the room out with a smell of lamb, right, a lot of them snooty cunts, they don't like it, right? No, it wasn't like that, but... I suppose, that, like, you know, sort of to appeal probably to the middle class parents, it's like, and we do have an Oxbridge scheme, right? So they've gone, right, we want to put you forward. I've gone, yeah. I was like, yeah, fuck it. I didn't have inverted snobbery about Oxford or Cambridge. I was like, fucking hell. Bit like what you're saying. I'm thinking, if that gives me a huge advantage afterwards, then fuck it, I'll go. But, and I was on course to get all the A's you needed, right? But the truth is, I went to the interview and I was just not smart enough to get in. That's the simple truth. I went there and I was going to get the grades I needed, but they sit down, they ask you questions, right?
Yeah.
They go, right then, cunt. What makes you think you're so fucking clever? And I remember a lot of the questions they asked me, and I remember my answers, and I was just fucking all over the gap. I was like a child being asked questions that, frankly, I would struggle to answer coherently now.
Yeah.
And, I just wasn't, the truth is, I was not good enough to go to that university at that time in my life, you know.
I had a similar experience when I was interviewed for a job as a writer on Ant and Dec's Saturday Night Takeaway.
Right.
And I was down to the last two to get a job.
Fucking hell, mate. That's amazing.
Well, I shouldn't have been there because I had an agent at the time, and my agent said that they're looking for writers for this new show, this new Ant and Dec show, and they want someone to write some spoof adverts to do with, the win the ads bit that they do.
Right. Like, yeah.
On the show, they wanted some spoof adverts written, and my agent said, you probably won't get anywhere with it, but it'd be a good exercise to do it. And I did these spoof ads, and they were so good that they got me in to ask me to interview me to write. And I didn't have a fucking clue. I didn't have any idea about what the show would be like, or I wasn't a seasoned writer on light entertainment, so they wanted kind of more from me in the interview, were kind of like, what sort of things would you do on the show and what sort of features could we have? And I was just like, I only wrote some adverts. I don't know why I'm here.
I like jokes. You could do some jokes, maybe, but not like not ones, more observational like.
I'm from the same part of the world as Ant and Dec, you see, so I think I can that write gives me an advantage.
In their dialect.
Yeah, didn't get
I mean,
job.
What it shows in both cases is that a lot of it's... I suppose a lot of these things are to do with culture. They're cultural, right? So I mean, I'm not saying I had the brain capacity either way. I don't think that I did. But the point is that I might have, if I'd gone to a posher school and been surrounded by people who went to Oxford or Cambridge, for example, I might have known the sort of language and the kind of framework you required to look as if you were the right sort of a person. But what I'm really trying to say is I don't think it was to do with class or being from the right background as such. I don't think they took a look at me and thought, oh, not this cunt. In fact, I think that what they fucking dream of at these places to a large degree is that some cunt's going to turn up with a regional accent who's from a state school, but he's going to fucking blow their socks off intellectually, because then they think, fucking win double, mate.
Someone who ticks a box, doesn't it?
And those people do exist, of course. They do sometimes come along. But if you're not fucking top, you're not a great intellect, which, with a heavy heart, I have to confess, I was not and am not, then you need something else, don't you? You need to know you need to know the ropes and the landscape. And that's the same with your experience, is that, like, you proved that you could deliver the quality, but when you find yourself in that world, like lots of industries, comedy writing is a little what would you call it? Not a cartel. That makes it sound corrupt. But we know a lot of comedy writers. We've come across them, and they all kind of know each other, and they know the scene, and they know what's required on a show.
Yeah,
I mean, if you remember when we did the much missed highbrow satirical comedy show on Vladimir Putin's propaganda machine, RT, Sam Delaney's news thing, there was basically, in the writer's room, which you would sometimes sit in, there was like a couple of lads who were seasoned pros at working on TV. I mean, one of the lads, he'd fucking done the lot. I mean, he'd gone through, you couldn't, there was no fucking show he hadn't like worked on at some point. So he was a real pro. So you had him there and he knew exactly what was required.
Yeah.
And then you had some other ones who'd been around the houses and done a bit. And then you had me, you, and a couple of other waifs and strays that I'd sort of invited in because I thought they were funny. And we thought it was just like, you just get in a room and you all talk shit to each other for a while. And then someone's, then you make sure that like there's some younger person's in there writing it all down, and then you hand it off to a producer and go, turn that into a television program, will ya? Which is why
it kind of worked, though. I think that did work.
It did, but at top level and Deck Saturday Night Takeaway, it's like you can't take any chances. It's basically like if you're managing a Sunday league team like that, it might have some success. But what you can't do is like if you're managing Liverpool in the Champions League, go, listen, right, I've seen a couple of lads playing down at the park on Sunday league. And I know this seems a bit weird, but they are fucking maverick. They are brilliant. They are so skillful. But they don't know how to play tactically. They've not been through the machine. Yeah. I know, but just it's a bit like your lad Cummins, the much missed Dominic Cummins, right? You know what I call him? National treasure, Dominic Cummins.
Yeah, now that he's out of the way, you can kind of look back on it fondly.
Well, it's like a lot of things that go wrong in Britain. With the fullness of time, I become affectionate towards them because they're sort of so quintessentially British.
And I think that's a bit
disastrous and ridiculous. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, we came up with a show once, me and some of those lads we were talking about. In fact, I'd have been better off getting you to do it with me. Was just 101 best moments in Britain, right? But it was like number one was like Fenton. Do you know what I mean? It was all shit like that, basically.
Yeah.
And like number two was like Nasty Nick taking a pencil into the Big Brother house. And like Cat Bin Lady. Do you know what I mean? But
well, we should do this as a spin-off series.
Oh, it's really good. Yeah, I'll have a list somewhere of some of the things.
Yeah.
Like, what was it? Another one was...
free content.
One of them was... when Paul McCartney and his mates turned up to throw hamburgers at David Blaine when he was suspended in that box. Do you remember that?
No.
Paul McCartney and his mates went out on the piss, right? They went out on the piss, him and the lads, lads.
I do, yeah.
They went out on the piss. And then someone, I like to think Macca himself, had gone, fuck it, let's go. Hey, I've got an idea. Have you seen this cod Blaine in his fucking box? Let's go over there and chalk shit at him. We'll stop at McDonald's and pick up some burgers to lob at the cunt. Fucking amazing.
We should get the listeners to nominate their greatest moments in British history, and we'll try and do a spin-off series.
It would be a really good spin-off series. And then what were some other ones? Oh, we were talking about them recently. Like, I went out for a curry with a couple of mates, and we spent like quite a large proportion of it trying to decide what the best thing to have ever happened was between, right? There was only two nominations.
Right.
One was Jamie Vardy tweeting, chat shit, get banged. And the other one was Harvey, Katie Price's son, going, hello, cunts. And it was only two options. I obviously wanted the third option to be Jackie Stallone going, yeah, Bricky, which is sort of always in my top two or three moments of all time. Oh my God, Jackie, yeah, Bricky. I mean, those are and so you look back on shit and you look at Dominic, and if we were to do it, you know, and at number 50, Dominic Cummins, and
he's
it's not
there.
Like a particular incident, it's just Dominic Cummins generally, right? Because you can look back and go, yeah, he was a cunt and he was awful and he basically tried to single-handedly destroy the country and he may well have succeeded, but so British. Like, you wonder whether or not any other cunt like that could have thrived so to such a great degree, such a significant degree in any other country.
Yeah, especially
anyway,
given that he was unelected. I mean, you can look at Trump trying to destroy America, but, you know.
At least he got voted for by fucking millions of Americans.
Yeah, Cummins.
So you can't completely condemn it, can you?
Cummins just turned
up. He just fucking rocked
up. Stuck in.
What? He was the beneficiary of Boris Johnson thinking, I like the idea of having Prime Minister on my business card, but I don't like the idea of actually being Prime Minister because it's fucking hard and boring, right? I preferred it when I was the editor of Spectator and I just got to shag everyone, right? And so he thought, oh, I need some cunt who doesn't mind doing this sort of shit. Someone who's enough of a fucking boring nerd who'll actually relish it and just take over everything. This cunt will do it.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, but he put an ad out, didn't he? Going mavericks, geniuses, dickheads and wankers or whatever. And I thought, I can see what he's going for because he's arrived in government. He's looked around and like all kind of institutional worlds, it's got there's certain things that the things that are done and not done, the structures, the hierarchies, the conventions, the rules.
Yeah.
That is all 93% shit. 97% shit, right? It is really. It's like, well, that's not the done thing. Mm. And in government, I bet it's really like that. And sometimes in times of crisis, you're quite happy that we've got this kind of quite old-fashioned, stuffy bureaucracy, the civil service, because you think, oh, fuck, the country's in crisis. At least those cunts are going to just fucking know how to do it by the book. Do you know what I mean? But sometimes you're like, oh, God, why are we run by these faceless bureaucrats who are all fucking 97%ers? Right?
Dominic Cummings and Dominic kind of thought he was running a record label. Didn't he?
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
He thought he was Alan McGee in the 90s.
Yeah.
He thought he was Alan McGee in the 90s. Yeah. Fuck it. Let's say an Oasis.
Exactly. Exactly.
He was Alan McGee striding into King... what is it? King Tut's Wawa Club.
King Tut's Wawa.
Is that what that thing?
Hut. It's a hut.
Hut, that's it.
A Glaswegian
in 1993. Yeah. I'm discovering the best band I've ever seen in my life. Right, yeah, that's what he thought he was up to.
He did.
And so you can sort of see the theory behind it, but obviously, you know, joking aside, Dominic Cummings is an awful cunt and a blemish on the history of this country. But you can see what he was going for, and I suppose, you know, if Oxford had let me in... But there's a difference in our stories anyway, because... Ant and Dec, and I'm not saying this blows smoke up your ass. The truth is, Ant and Dec would have done well to have hired you because they probably had a load of like good but solid journeymen on their team, and you could have been the maverick. But Oxford would not have been correct to have hired me because I wouldn't have contributed much, really.
I mean, I should retract what I said at the very beginning, the comments about Oxford and Cambridge and everything, because I've got a mate who went to Oxford, and she was kind of fish out of water as well. And she had a really, really bad time with it all. But because it was all structured in the way that it is, kind of like the civil service, and it was full of people who were destined to be there and they knew they were destined to be there and all that kind of thing. It certainly wasn't a hothouse centre of excellence, which it should be. But
my younger sister went, but that's not the reason why I'm all like this. It's just that I know, you know, I've met lots of people who've been to Oxford, Cambridge. Some of them have been nice and some of them have been cunts. And some of them have been really clever and some of them haven't been as impressive as you might expect. But I just think everyone's fucking human. Do you know what I mean? And everyone's flawed and everyone has shit happen to them. And you just don't know how life's going to fucking turn out.
Totally.
But it's obviously a big advantage in lots of ways. My sister she's like my half sister and she did go to private school. But even so, she didn't go to like one of the super posh sort of boarding ones. And she did say you basically have to gravitate towards the non-cunts. She said that, you know, there is the dominant tribe are people who like literally when they're 18, organising dinner parties where you all wear tuxedos and the women dress up in gowns from fucking the first week. And that's just normal. And she went, and that's a really quick way to start working out who are the cunts and who are all right.
Yeah. Fucking hell, what a world.
Dinner party cunts.
18-year-old dinner party cunts, imagine that.
Yeah.
Fucking hell.
Yeah, exactly, the worst. I mean, even at a normal school, you remember some kids who were really keen to act like grown-ups at a young age by doing sort of silly things like that. And they're fucking, they're heading down one path in the crossroads of your adolescence, there is one path marked Lampard Avenue, and that's where those cunts are headed.
We're going to rock down to Lampard Avenue.
Avenue.
We're going to have a dinner party. As Eddie Grant said,
I've told you that my mate Darren dated Eddie Grant's daughter.
He did,
for a long time.
Yeah.
When I was first with good mates with him, that was his bird. Was that Eddie Grant's?
And holidays abroad at Eddie Grant's Jamaican party.
He went to fucking Electric Avenue Studios, mate.
Fucking hell!
hanging about there.
Jalapeño.
Here's a brief but annoying message to let you know that you wouldn't be hearing this brief but annoying message if you were a subscriber to our Iron Filing Society Patreon offering.
For the price of a pint and a St. Clement's each month, you can get up to 4 episodes a week, 9 months before the rest of the world gets them. Early access to regular episodes, lots of other marvellous benefits, and there's absolutely no adverts or brief but annoying messages like this that'll get right on your tits.
Find out more and subscribe now at tftimemachine.com/ironfilings.
Jalapeño.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Jalapeño.
In the following section, Sam says black grape when, of course, he means happy Monday. So, Lampards, please do not get in touch with your corrections.
Jalapeño.
Fucking hell.
I can't remember if he was there when black grape were there on crack, but he certainly had great stories about that.
Is that where they recorded?
Because that's where
album?
Black grape. Remember when the black grape did an album called Yes Please, where they accidentally got super into crack.
Well, that was it. Tony Wilson wanted to send them away somewhere because Sean was like,
get them away from heroin.
Sean was coming off heroin. So he sent them to, was it Antigua? I'm not sure. Oh, it was Barbados. It was Barbados.
Yeah.
They sent them to Barbados.
And it was Eddie Grant Studios,
there was no heroin on Barbados, but what they didn't know was it was riddled with crack.
Crack. And so he thought, great.
And they stayed there for about a year to make the album.
He talks about that in, so you know, I can't remember if I've discussed this on the pod, but you know when we went to Manchester and we met up with Sean? And I did that interview with him, but I never released the interview because I was going to do a series of podcasts on mental health and that. And I did a couple that day and I've just never fucking got around to it, basically, because, you know, just rest. But now I'm reviving the idea. I'm thinking of doing a newsletter about... No, I've been thinking about it over the last week because I found it. And the point is, I'm going to do it and I'm going to do a podcast and a newsletter about that sort of shit, you know, addiction, drugs. Because I get quite a lot of emails, as you know, you see a lot of them too, from about people, listeners to this who are like, I want to give up, I'm bang on the gear, mate. You get them in like really weird times of night. Have you noticed that? I'm bang on the gear. Yeah. I want to know how to knock it on the head. Mate.
And the emails are all in capital letters.
Also, I've attached some illustrations of some new inventions that I'm working on, and I was wondering if you'd like to get involved in my business. This is an electric cricket bat. Think about it. You don't have to move your arms. It just smashes the fucking ball when you press a button.
Smash. Are you going to call the podcast Touched in the Nut?
Good idea. Do you know what I'm thinking of calling it? The Reset. Because
it's good.
It's based on resetting your demons, number one. Number two sounds a bit like The Reflex, which, of course, is a great song. Mm-hmm. So, Reset.
Set.
I'm thinking of doing all of this because, you know, why not? But the Sean Ryder interview, which, as you know, was well over a year ago now. It was about 18 months ago.
Fucking hell, yeah.
We discussed that. We discussed his time in getting on the crack in Barbados,
right.
I think. I'll re-listen to it, but I'm pretty sure we go into that because I try to engage him. I told him, you know, look, Sean, this is going to be about mental health and that and drugs and how that's affected you. And he's just like, yeah, fine. Talk about anything. And so then I thought, oh, it's good. He's really like in touch with it. But then basically it was quite hard for me to engage him on it because he was willing to talk about the drugs he'd done. But when I said, and then of course, there's always a come down, isn't there? There's the dark side of it. But he sort of looked straight through me when I said that and looked a bit confused. No, not really, mate. If you start to feel sad, you just take more. Anyway.
Not a great first episode then.
Christmas but I'm going to have to put it out as the first episode. But I've got some other good nutters on it, I think. Mm. I'm going to, like, for instance, my best friend Chris Ryan.
Yeah.
I'll be getting him on it because he's...
Is he touched in the nut as well?
Yeah. Well, I asked him once, I said, do you know, does doing this kind of caper send you bananas? And he went, well, put it this way. He goes... Never mind, send you bananas. He goes, I don't think you're likely to get into the SAS in the first place unless you already have some quite big issues.
That's reassuring.
He goes, you're not attracted to it. Because if you listen to that, the podcast that we're doing, that Life or Death, all of them, apart from Ollie Ollerton, as we discussed last week, all of them say, oh, well, yeah, my childhood was really unhappy. I had a really tough childhood. And so they almost already were damaged. And that's what drew them to the military and pushed them to the very highest part of the military in the first place. Unless you're Ollie Ollerton, where it's a bit different because he was attacked by a monkey, a chimp at a circus in Burton-on-Trent in 1980. And that, I don't know if that's a common routine to the special forces or maybe it just is. I don't know.
But it's quite unique, I think.
Did you listen to that interview?
I haven't got right away. Oh yet. My no, god, I'm mate! I'm going to do it.
Save it as a treat. Save it as a treat because that's just the tip of the iceberg.
Really?
There's a lot of other great content in there.
I'll get into it.
I forgot to tell you that at one point he says he was obsessed with chimps, and when he first came face to face with a chimp, he goes, "I was captivated." He went, "It was basically like a woman setting eyes on George Clooney in person for the first time."
What, he was already obsessed with chimps before this incident?
Yes.
Oh, of course, because that's why he went up to it, isn't it? Yeah.
So what he's saying is he felt, looking at a chimp in the eyes, he said the closest he can imagine it must be like when a woman meets George Clooney in the flesh.
Yeah,
that's how he felt.
So there was already something there. It wasn't just the incident with the chimp. There was shit going on leading up to the incident, wasn't there?
If you love chimpanzees, you fucking love them, right?
Yeah.
And then the first time you encounter a chimpanzee, it beats the shit out of you. And that's going to have a fucking impact on your worldview, isn't it, mate?
Definitely, because it's a strange worldview to begin with. And then to have that happen to you and have your whole world spun on its axis, it's going to make you flee to the special forces, I guess.
Next thing you know, you're in the special boat service, slotting Iraqis left, right, and centre.
Did you?
That's what they say, don't they, in the military? Slotting.
Yeah, on the telly last night. Did you watch the second Steve McQueen Small Axe film?
No, I haven't seen the first one either.
The first one was fucking fantastic about a restaurant.
Is that the one with John Boyega in about the copper?
No,
that's John Boyega from Star Wars.
That's next week, I think. The first one was about a restaurant in, I can't remember where it was, Ladbroke Grove, I think, and they just kept getting, they were just under constant police harassment and brutality, and it ended with a protest, and it ended with a court case. Long story, but really worth watching. Last night's, though, was fucking unbelievable. It was called Lover's Lock, and it was just about one of those blues parties they used to have in a house.
In
the early 80s, and it was just about this one party. And that good things happened, bad things happened, et cetera, et cetera. But there were these elongated scenes in it where they just played the music and just showed the people dancing at these parties. Brilliant. And they played Silly Games, Janet Kay.
Oh, Janet Kay. Is that Janet Kay?
I think it was, yeah. We always get this wrong. We've mentioned this before.
Oh, and yeah, because we accidentally thought that Janet Kay was Jamiroquai's mum once.
Yeah, and then we thought she was Faith Brown as well. I'm not sure. Yes, Silly Games by Janet Kay. And that was
Janet Kay was married to, what's his name, Butterworth from the Carry On.
Janet Kay was married to Charles Horry. Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, that's it, yeah.
Yeah, weird couple. They had these bits of the parties. You know, in regularly in a drama, if they're showing a party, they'll show you like about 30 seconds of people dancing at a party sort of thing to give you a flavour of what's happening. Then it'll cut away to some people talking or something else happening. These scenes went on for like fucking 7 or 8 minutes just of them dancing at these parties. It was fucking...
With beautiful music.
It was fucking magnificent, honestly.
Yeah, those blues parties, I've read about them a lot, like in Ian Wright's sensational autobiography, which I would encourage anyone to read.
Yeah.
It's sort of too good to deep dive because it's just a genuinely brilliant book.
Yeah.
Because what it does is it gives you loads of insight to social history.
right? He's very eloquent about social history, and the Blues Parties is like, yeah, just a fascinating thing, because in that era they came about because you couldn't really.
Well, black people
weren't allowed. It was too dangerous to socialise.
Black people weren't allowed into discos and nightclubs, basically.
Yeah, discos, yeah. Pubs, anything. So you yeah. just had to start having parties at home
yeah.
and hope that the police didn't come and smash up your house, which they might.
Yeah.
But you'd be slightly less risky than going out publicly.
Mm-hmm. That was it, yeah.
But the laugh was on everyone else because those parties were better than any other party.
Honestly, it's one of the best things I've seen on telly for fucking ages. So good.
Oh, yeah.
Get it watched.
You've inspired me. I'm going to watch it today.
Yeah. I'm going to go back and watch. I'll watch the party scenes again, just stand alone, because they were so good.
And get yourself some Lovers Rock on CD.
And at the beginning of it as well, as they announced it, they said, now on BBC One, the second small acts film, Lovers Rock, directed by Steve McQueen. Steve has asked viewers to turn up the volume for this film as loudly as possible without... disrupting your neighbours or disturbing your neighbours.
Wow.
And they said
that's
that.
Brilliant.
You know, at the beginning, there's something they would normally say, this contains strong language and violence.
Yeah,
they
said, yeah, yeah.
The fella behind this wants you to turn the cunt up.
Fucking hell. You know, you've made it when you're actually making a film where you actually get written into your contract that you can script what the continuity woman says to introduce it.
Yeah.
Then you know you're powerful.
Yeah. It was amazing, though. Really, really good. Watch it.
What did you make of The Wall this week? I only watched it last night.
Oh, fucking hell. I really wanted them to do well. I really liked them. It was a
They were the most likable.
Yeah.
Ever. Even Len liked them. Even Len, who's usually against them, he went, I like these two. The bloke looked exactly like Slaven Bilic, who me and Len are very affectionate towards anyway, so that helped. The woman I had she triggered me. Sort of borderline triggering. I had a bit of a crush on her. But she wasn't just that she was very attractive physically. She was also a right laugh, wasn't she? Like, you know, some of them, they're just putting it on, and that's why you take against them. They put on a sort of larger-than-life, wacky personality of all that shouting at the wall, and you just think, what the fuck do you think you're going to do? Get spotted by the fucking This Morning to do a consumer fucking slot or something, right?
She was almost embarrassed to do it at the beginning. She was almost embarrassed to coax.
And do you know what was really interesting? She was obviously, as a couple, they were head and shoulders above any other contestants we've had this series, right? They were so nice and such a laugh. And Danny, who usually is just like, right, let's get this over and done with, fuck's sake. Who are you, cunts? Right, fine. Drop your ball.
This is about me.
Danny loved them.
He did.
Danny was having nice little chats. He kept his face kept lighting up. He was trying to have banter with both of them. He thought, yeah, I like these people. They're my people.
It seemed like there was lots more chat. There was lots more chats, and there was lots more deliberation over the questions. And I thought, oh fuck, this is being edited because they're going to end up not even dropping the last three red balls because they'll have fucked up, and that's why it feels longer. But they did get wiped out, but. Right at the end.
Did you well up when she goes, we're left with nothing, but I love you. I love you so much.
Yeah.
And I was like, fucking hell.
Yeah. And they'd said that they had a really bad time during COVID and all that sort of thing as well earlier on. It was just fucking hell.
It was
you
tough.
Think it's some of the fuckers
they've
got up.
They're nice people. I look at some of the other couples and I've got to admit, I don't like to be judgy, but I look at some of them and I think, I don't have much faith in this relationship. I think it's built on sand. And I think
that money's all going to go to the lawyers in a couple of years.
Yeah. I think the money and going on the wall for a lot of them is a sticking plaster.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
To sort of almost distract from the real problems in their lives. And but these two, nah, they're solid as a rock.
They were lovely.
Mate.
And that's it for the wall for now. It's back at Christmas with, get this, the celebrity wall. Fuck off.
Depends on who the celebs are,
mate. Chris Kamara's on it. Chris Kamara's on it, but, you know, Chris Kamara will turn up to anything. I don't want to see celebrities, because we don't have a charity, which is all well and good. Charities deserve money, but I want to see real people playing for real money, for life-changing money.
Yeah, and I like it when there's little VTs that show their garden, and they go, right, we want to get this garden sorted. We're going to need 20 grand.
I don't want celebrity wall. I mean, I'm probably... fucked off because we haven't been invited on. That's probably what it is deep down. But we're not there yet, are we? We're not at that level yet. We're going to...
Why don't they do a podcaster special?
Yeah. That's not going to happen either. But it's been.
They could have us versus. They could have us versus. What's his name? Richard Herring.
Yeah. Have you seen what's on next week, though? What's been replaced with? Michael McIntyre's The Wheel. What?
I know. It's weird.
You can't replace
like,
a wall
something...
with a wheel. What the fuck?
A wall, the wheel?
Yeah.
What next? The fucking floor?
Do you think Michael McIntyre's rang up the BBC and gone, I see that you're doing that thing called The Wall and it looks excellent, but I've got an idea for a show called The Wheel. And I'm Michael McIntyre.
One thing, what's better than a wall? A wheel. It's like a wall, but one that moves.
It goes round and round.
I mean, the problem with the wall, is it's completely stationary.
Fucking cunt.
I like him. I like
you
Michael
like him,
McIntyre.
Do you?
Yeah. I reckon he's all right. Everyone hates on him. But I just think, yeah, he seems all right.
Do you think... He's just like a Lampard. He's a comedy Lampard.
Is he? I don't know. I don't know enough about him. I met him like a few times when he was on the way up before he was a big deal. And I used to do this Saturday morning show on 5 Live and it was sort of football. Sort of football, but you know, you have whoever on celebrities and that. And he rocked up to talk about Spurs. Mm. He's a Spurs fan. And I obviously thought, is this posh cat there? Fucking Spurs sounds about... I thought he sounds about fucking that. And he's turned out and he was just fucking really genuine. You know, like, even if it's someone from a club you hate, you can see when they've got genuine passion and knowledge and it's not just some bullshit kind of, oh, I support a football team because that might help me sell more tickets.
Like sort David
of thing,
Cameron
right?
supporting Aston Villa and then West Ham for a minute
and then forgetting it.
Shit.
So it wasn't one of those bullshit things. I thought, here is a guy who's a fucking passionate Spurs fan. As much as I hate Spurs, you've got to respect that. Do you know what I mean?
Mm.
He absolutely loved them. He knew all about them. And he was charming as well.
Spurs
so,
is shot
as a result
the Hotspur.
Next question. Tottenham Hotspur was founded in 1876 by Sir John Tottenham.
Tottenham Hotspur's best players include Jimmy Greaves, Glenn Hoddle and Ricky Veer. Next question.
Tottenham Hotspur play in white shirts and blue shorts.
Tottenham
and their badge is a cockerel stood upon an association football.
Tottenham Hotspur always, always try their hardest. Next question.
Tottenham Hotspur believe in fair play with passion and pride.
And flair. We always try to play with flair. Next question.
Tottenham always go on about having flair players, don't they?
Well, some clubs I like that, don't they? Some clubs have got a way, haven't they? We've got a way.
I know you're going to say it's West Ham, but it's true that clubs go... Certain clubs, it's just like we've said before, they go, they love their football up here.
Yeah.
Those silly commentators go, they love their football up here in Newcastle. You get southern commentators who think they're really clever by going, Newcastle. And actually, that's a bit racist because that's appropriating language. It's no different. Listen, it's no different. If you're let's say you're a cricket commentator, right? You don't go, and here we are, and England come out for the first test match against the West Indies. You wouldn't say that because it would sound racist.
But then it's like when some commentators pronounce Spanish team names in a Spanish dialect. Mm. Barcelona.
Barcelona.
Is that racist? I can't decide. That's racist, is it?
If you say Ajax, Ajax, then you're being racist to the Dutch.
So you got to call them Ajax.
You got to call them Ajax like Big Ron. And the irony is, Big Ron was the one they said was racist, but he was the only one who was, saying Ajax and Juventus.
But
right?
he also said
so
that other
fact,
thing.
He was the least racist of all of them.
Well, apart from that word that he said.
Well, apart from when he was racist, yeah.
Yeah. So you like Michael McIntyre. That's fine. I'd like to think he's one of these ones who, when he's off camera, he's just a grumpy cunt. But I don't think he is.
He seemed really jolly when I met him, but he seemed charming. I was won over, I guess, personally, because I thought, you got to take people as you find them. And it was before he got super famous. And then as he went up the ladder, I noticed more and more people hating him.
Mm. Well, look, Sam, we'll just watch his fucking wheel on Saturday night and then we'll talk about it next week and we'll decide
We'll see what
is
we
he
make
any
of
good
that.
Or not.
We'll be the fucking judges of this, you cunt.
His career will live or die next Monday morning on our podcast.
With your fucking wheel. Oi, mate, have you played your board game of The Wall yet?
Not yet, no. No, there's no enthusiasm for it in this house at all.
I've bought it for Len for his birthday, which is this Wednesday.
You had it out to test it.
No, I haven't. I am going to wrap it today because I want to get ahead of myself. But we bought him a few things, and some parent cunters will recognise this dilemma. Basically, it's obviously a month before Christmas.
Mm.
So we've got a few presents we've been picking up as we go along, and my wife has now decided it's too many because she's sort of quite anti-spoiling, whereas I like to live out loud.
Of course,
just
yeah.
in parenting, just as I do in my professional life, right?
Yeah, you want that sad, you can have it.
Oh, fuck. Someone's calling me out. I'm a bit like, give him all the presents.
Every
so
day.
So I have got the wall, but my wife is trying to make me hold the wall back till Christmas because she thinks it's a great Christmas Day present, which is true.
It is.
But, mate, it's going to be burning a hole in my fucking soul to know that the wall is sat there. And very often this time of year when the weather's bad, like me and Len will often, not just at the weekend, even like after school on a weekday, we'll like have a board game,
yeah,
right? Go fancy a game of Monopoly, right? Something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And if I'm sitting there playing fucking Monopoly or Risk or what have you, when I know that upstairs in a box there is a fucking... a board game of the wall with Danny on the fucking cover.
Yeah.
It'll be driving me mad. So fuck it, mate. I think I'm just going to give it to him on Wednesday.
If you don't do that, you're going to have to buy yourself another one and play it up your lockup on your own.
Yeah, against who? On my own, like when I had to play Sabutio against myself when I was a kid because I was so lonely.
Yeah, well, just do play against different personas of yourself. Sam 1 and Sam 2.
I have done that loads. So I was such a lonely child.
Well, Richard Herring does that, doesn't he? He plays snooker against himself on his... video podcast things.
Well, if it's good enough for Herring.
It's good enough for us. Look, we've run out of time.
That's, what about the predictions?
That's it, yeah. Yeah, predictions. You got 5 points, results, but got 3. I got 1. That's it from this episode. Thanks for listening. Thanks.
Oh, yeah, you like to skate over them, don't you, when I do well?
Goodbye.
When West Ham won.
Thank you so much. Goodbye.
Thank you. You're so kind. I used to be treated so nicely. What with me being so grotesque?
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.